F1A, number 18B.
Now, let's see how we epitomize the story so as to be able to see if we can reduce that biblical text to metaphysical renderings and to a synonymous term. We have on page 120, we begin with the epitomes. In the Minor Prophet book, and there we have first perhaps to see what is the general trend or the general tone in Zephaniah. In Zephaniah, the general trend tone is destroy, 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 consume, wipe out. So we have there really that third horizontal of Christianity, which says that in Christianity the disappearance of evil is rendered inescapable, and the appearing of the idea is also rendered inescapable. And as we look through it, we can see that the general tonality was always, I will consume and destroy and take away and punish and cast out. And then at the end, we could see that that was all done so that there is nothing erroneous left over, so that then at its place, really, the beauty of the idea, the perfection of the idea can be brought out, so that the destruction of error is the establishment of truth. It's not just destruction, and we don't need to feel that it has all to do with destruction. It has actually to do with establishment of the truth. So this tone should go actually through every epitome in every subject. Therefore, here in mind, Zephaniah mostly used the term consume. So we have here, mind consumes all that is not divinely minded. He has said that he will consume all things, and allowing only a consciousness of divine mindedness to remain. He gave that sense through the whole tone that that which is good will remain, but that all that which has a false attitude in mind. We had those three subtones, the false attitudes towards the universe, towards all things, the false attitude towards worshipping a dualistic God, not the monistic God, the attitude then in soul that was an attitude of turning away from God. Can you see? So mind consumes that false attitude, all that is not divinely minded, allowing only a consciousness of divine mindedness to remain. So we always will see in that epitome those two things happening, the disappearance that is wrong and the appearance of that which is true. So when we entertain mind in consciousness as the divine mind, then naturally we can no more entertain a mortal mind, an erroneous mind, erroneous opinion, human opinion. This we can't do at the same time, so that as we entertain mind alone, that consumes, really wipes away, puts out of our consciousness erroneous thinking, so that more and more only the divine mindedness is present in our consciousness. Then we went to the second main tone. You remember it was all about worship. The prophet takes the subtone of mind and spirit now and makes out of that subtone spirit a main tone and enlarges on that as a main tone. And he shows here what I said. Spirit wipes away. So you have again a wiping away. You see, can you see in every epitome you have a tone of the whole of Zephaniah. It's the wiping away. So we know that really in structuralism, if we want to see finally the prophets as a structure, that in structuralism every part must reflect in some measure the whole. And so also in these epitomes, the whole is somehow contained. So here in spirit wipes away. That's Zephaniah, or that's Christianity as Christianity, wipes away the worship of materiality. Remember how he said that they clothed themselves with foreign apparel, with luxury, with silver, with gold, and so on. He was all against that. So they worship matter. So spirit, if we entertain spirit within us, it wipes away the worship of materiality. You know, it doesn't wipe away matter. It doesn't wipe away our bank account, not at all. It wipes away our love for materiality, our evaluating materiality more than the spiritual. That has to be taken away, not matter as such. So we haven't to walk around with nothing in our pocket, with all clothes, and live in a hut. It takes away the love for matter, the building up of matter in consciousness. So spirit wipes away the worship of materiality. Now the positive sense, allowing only a consciousness of spiritual sanctity to remain. That spiritual sanctity, that assembly on the holy mountain. Or it goes to soul. And there we have seen soul was all about that day of judgment, the day of the Lord, which is at the same time the day of trouble and distress and dismay, etc. So here we have that soul burns up, that's Zephaniah, burns up. Now comes soul, all that testifies to sin in us, the positive, allowing only the consciousness of spiritual understanding to remain. Can you see, always those two things are there, what it wipes away, so that when it is wiped away, that the positive will remain and will stand out. Then we had that principle of the unsystematic thinking. So I put it there and said principle scatters. So scatters is Zephaniah. Can you see these epitomes are much more delicate as a reader can see. I think perhaps most have not seen that I always characterize each epitome with a tone that is the tonality of the whole of Zephaniah. The scattering, the wiping away, the burning up, and so on. So principle scatters all unsystematic thinking. On the other side, allowing only a scientific consciousness to remain. If we come to life, we had that story that all the cities round about Judah, all the lands round about Judah, bordering to Judah, the Gaza, the Philistines, the Midianites, the Amorites, and so on, all they were destroyed. Even the big, far, great powers, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, he was talking about, will be wiped out. So we have here life brings to desolation, Zephaniah, brings to desolation. He said that all those big cities and mighty cities are just become grazing ground for Israel's herds and sheep. So that life brings desolation, brings to desolation the pursuit of self-exaltation. Because all these cities were always exalting themselves above Israel, were always ridiculing Israel with their only God that didn't do anything for Israel, allowing only the consciousness of true individuality to remain. So in that passage we had that positive sense that everyone will worship from his own place. Everyone in his own way. How did he say it? And men shall worship him, everyone from his place. Even all the isles of the heathen. So we get the true individuality, where everyone could worship God in his own way. Then came that strong tone of truth, which here is summarized, epitomized. Truth devours, Zephaniah, devours the mortal claim for self-righteousness. He accuses that self-righteousness. So allowing only the consciousness of divine righteousness. That's truth. Self-righteousness, the counterfeit of truth. Then divine righteousness, the fact of truth. And finally we had that tone of love. Love silences. That's Zechariah. Silences. Completely. Silences completely. That's Zechariah. What? All accusation of error. We went through the word order and saw that he refuted all the accusation of error. Allowing only the consciousness of unalterable truth, unalterable perfection to remain. That was the reversed word order at the end. Everything was just fine, and showing that perfection cannot be touched anymore. So, if you look at it, we can see in these epitomes, we have, so to say, the Zephaniah in mind consumes all, in spirit wipes away all, in soul burns up all, in principle scatters all, in life brings to desolation, in truth devours all, in love silences completely. Can you see how these epitomes are built up? They are not just nice renderings and beautifully put words together, or that they sound rather poetic or anything like that. They are built up as scientifically as I could do that 25 years ago. First, always bringing in the tone of Zephaniah, that mind, see, destroys everything that is unlike mind, so that which is of mind likeness can be established. That spirit destroys everything that is unlike spirit and puts it away so that there is made room for the spirit likeness. Soul is the fire of soul that burns up everything that is unlike soul, so that when that is burned up, there is room for the soul-like attitude. And so with principle, that principle comes as a Christ to all of us and just wipes away everything that is not principle-like. And that therefore, by wiping away that which is not principle-like, the principle attitude, the scientific attitude in consciousness can take place. You can see how important this very point is, because so many students say, well, I didn't have an academic training, I didn't have a good schooling, I'm just a simple man or a woman, and therefore I cannot understand science, this is all humbug, because understanding Christian science is not dependent on academic schooling, not at all, but it's dependent on that fact. Do I have a oneness with principle? If I have a oneness in this principle, and that principle has a Christ, and that Christ comes and wipes away everything that is unlike principle. It wipes away that we can, that we think unsystematic, that we think in isolated ideas, and wipes that away and prepares within the ground, principle prepares within us that ground to be able to understand being in a systematic way. So this is not dependent on academic training. Everyone can do that if he obeys the law of divine science. And so life also comes to us and destroys everything that is unlike life, like pride of life, like the self-exaltation of life, and brings that all down and destroys it so that the true individuality of life can be brought forth. So we find our true individuality, our true mission in life, and can really find the way of life. And the same is true about truth, that truth comes to us as the whole of truth and therefore wipes away all that is unlike truth, wipes away all the injustice in us, all the lying in us, and the mortal consciousness in us, so that there is made room for the divine consciousness, the spiritual consciousness, to take place within us. And so it is with love. He showed there very nicely that love comes to us, to each one of us, and destroys within us all that is not love-like, and therefore makes room for that which is love-like, namely that we entertain and embrace as the daughter of science, as the womanhood, the motherhood of God, that we embrace all right ideas about truth, about life, about principle, about soul and spirit and mind, so that the whole world is being blessed with that consciousness. That's Zephaniah. Actually, we can use that and free ourselves even much more from the biblical terminology and see it as a measure of treatment. There's something that I haven't touched yet, and I should have really pointed out perhaps even before, namely that we were talking about the Christ matrix, that and the Christ is always the relationship of God to man, always the Christ coming from God to man and the universe. It's the impact of God on his universe. That's the Christ. And so we say, well, just like here in Zephaniah, we say, oh yes, mind comes and consumes everything within me that is not mind-like, and so makes room for that which is mind-like. Now, we must be aware that this is only the Christ standpoint, and that the Christ standpoint without the Word standpoint does not work. As long as we just say, mind comes to me and consumes everything in me that is not mind-like, we only talk about terms. Because what does mind mean? What does mind mean that comes to me? What is that mind? What is that? Where is that? Is that somewhere up in heaven and just comes down like an angel with wings coming down to us? What is that Christ idea? What is that mind coming down to us, that mind that consumes something in us? That mind has only spiritual meaning when it is held and established in our consciousness through prayer, through the Word. That's why we have to have the Word before the Christ. The Word is what? The Word, let's say, is prayer. It's first that which says within ourselves, do I really want to have one mind? It's that question, do I really pray to one mind? Where is that one mind? In me. Do I really believe that I and the Father are one? Do I really believe that there is only one mind within me? That there is only one mind of the universe? And first must we therefore have a oneness with mind. Therefore, our oneness with mind before mind can come to me and do something. If we don't have that, if the textbook would not start out with prayer and with the word chapters, the Christ has no power. The Christ is an empty. Then we talk about empty terms that have no spiritual content. So that mind is not just the term somewhere, and is not the power just somewhere that in a magical way, in a mystical way, just comes to us and does something. It doesn't do it. If that mind is not first within us, through prayer, it is far away and it doesn't do a trick. So these laws here that we afterwards will see, these prophecies which we epitomize, we always must be aware that we only take the Christ aspect out of the whole aspect, out of the four sides of the city, and consider it and analyze it. But it is never separate from the Word. Therefore, without inward prayer, those Christ ideas have no power. They are just terms then in our consciousness. So the question is always, do we establish in our consciousness first our unity with mind? That's always the first thing. Do we establish the unity with mind? If that is established, mind has a unity with us. Then we can see the prophets that say constantly, my hand is still stretched out. The Christ still says, my hand is still stretched out. You still can take it and I save you. But first of all, we must have that unity with mind. And that's naturally what is brought out in prayer, which is brought out in Atonement and Eucharist to strengthen that inward prayer, that is brought out in marriage, in the chapter marriage, in order to make it alive within us, so that we are one with the universe, and not only one with the so-called God. And we must have the fourth chapter, the Word as Science, where we are quite sure that we do not mix up God with its opposite, that we have no more dualistic sense within us. So can you see, that when we go through these epitomes as they are here, as I have gone through them just 5 or 10 minutes ago, that has no power except I have first filled my thought to be one with the synonymous terms, to be one with God. So sitting down just and take those epitomes and say, all right, I will be very faithful, and I go through those epitomes and I say to myself, yes, mind, the divine mind, consumes all that is not divinely minded. That doesn't do a trick. It has no power. It has no spiritual power. Only when I first really within myself pray and say, do I really accept one mind? You can see it is then the attitude from me to mind. Do I really accept there is only one mind? Can I see that mind is the only mind? Or do I have within myself just somewhere lingering something which says, but the human mind is also good? Or which says, well, I'm constantly having an erroneous mind, I'm always having a mind that believes in beliefs, and so on. You first have to struggle and struggle within yourself as prayer to see that there is actually only one mind, and one is absolutely convinced there can be only one mind. This is the struggle in prayer, that first. And that may take perhaps quite a bit of time and a bit of sorting out things until one feels, yes, our Father, Mother, God, all harmonious. I have a parent mind that is all harmonious. I have a parent mind that is all. I have a mind that is the all mind. There can't be any other mind. There is no place for any other mind. And I see that that mind is complete and perfect and holy and intact. Then, only then, has the Christ a chance to come into me. Then mind consumes in me. Through that prayerful attitude, mind consumes in me all that is not divine-minded and shuts it out. And so, with all those laws that we take, we will see that without first a prayerful attitude, these laws do not work. And that's something we have to see, because very often a student has said to me, well, I've been working with these laws very, very conscientiously, but somehow I couldn't solve my problems. And then I said, well, how did you go through those laws? They would say, well, just as they are there in your book. That mind consumes all that is not divinely minded. And I said, well, that's terms, that's words. Only because the terms are right, that does not mean that the attitude is right. But the attitude is that which gives to the terms, to the letter, power. So, well, this is what I want to bring out, so that one does not just use these books in a literal way again, just as one uses the Bible in a literal way and says, well, every word in the Bible is true. Well, it is true. Every word in it is true when we see it from a spiritual standpoint. And so also our books, I hope they are true, let's say they are true, our books, what we write, and therefore see, well, they have only power when our attitude is right.